Spring is still officially 3 days away, but the flowers on the trees tell the true story. The weather has felt like spring for weeks now. That creates potential problems for fruit growers, for one, because if the weather does turn colder, as it often does in mid-spring, they'll have to work hard to keep frost from killing their crops. Then there's the other issue. The blooms are out so early, they're ahead of the natural schedule for the bees that pollinate them. Sarah Redlaird, you've met her before on the Jefferson Exchange if you're a regular listener, goes by Bee Girl, that is her business around the Rogue Valley, knows quite a bit about bees and is our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Sarah, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's see if the microphone works this time.
Test. Hello.
Ah, there we go. First time it's worked all day. Excellent.
All right.
So thanks for coming again. And tell us a bit about yourself and the Bee Girl business and what got you so interested in starting this so long ago.
Oh, my gosh. I started beekeeping full time as a student at the University of Montana in Missoula in 2009. And in 2010, I moved back to Southern Oregon. I was born and raised here. Thinking I would just be here between research seasons to have the winter off and spend some time with my family. And then I started the Bee Girl organization in February of 2011. Helping people with their bees and talking to kids is how I got started. And then it just got so big so fast.
So you're still a beekeeper yourself.
I'm still a beekeeper. Yeah, we keep. Right now, last year we had about 40 hives, but we've had about 50% losses so far. So right now we have about 20 hives.
But is 50% loss something natural for the wintertime?
No.
Really?
That's quite high.
All right.
Yeah.
So what normally does happen in the wintertime, and what has happened instead of what normally happens in the wintertime?
Well, the normal losses or losses that are sustainable for a beekeeper are probably right in between about 5 to 14 or 15%. Our national average since about 2006, which is when we started the Bee Inform partnership, started paying attention to the national average, and the Agricultural Research Service started doing surveys as well, has been about 30% or more. So that's twice the unsustainable rate. And beekeepers in Southern Oregon this year that I've seen are having some issues. This is the highest losses that I've ever had. And other hobbyists and sideliner beekeepers that I work with have had anywhere between 50 and 90% losses.
These are not then, obviously, weather losses, as it has not been a very cold winter. So losses over what period of time and what causes do you attribute these to?
My idea is that it's Varroa infestation. So the Varroa mite is this pest that lives on the bee. So not only does this thing the size of, if it was on us, it'd be the size of a dinner plate. So you can think of a dinner plate with teeth living on your body. And not only is it obnoxious and distracting for the bee and chewing these big gaping holes in the bee's exoskeleton, it also is the vector for about at least 24 different viruses and diseases. And so even a treated Varroa infestation, especially a bad Varroa infestation, can take down bees in a matter of weeks. Even if you are as on top of it with your Varroa for treatments as much as you can be, there still can be Varroa living in the hive. And if there's Varroa present in the hive at an infestation rate above 5%, your hives have an average of 18 months to live. So what I'm starting to think is we had a really warm winter last winter as well. And like many things in nature, when there's a good, hard, cold winter, the pests die back. They're not able to really thrive. And so in the West, we really like our long, cold winters. And that's great for the bees because the bees go into a broodless period. They don't have any babies living down in the cells. And the babies, the larvae living down in the cells, is where the Varroa reproduce like mad. And because it's been so warm our last now 2 winters, the bees have not gotten a break from the Varroa mites. They've just been in there making babies and making more babies. And it's been a real challenge to try and stay on top of Varroa.
So the bees themselves are not going through this broodless period even? They're continuing to reproduce.
Yeah, as are the Varroa. So the bees just never get a break from these little vectors of disease and destruction.
Well, they really are all that, it sounds like, because they not only can chew holes in the bee, as you were talking about, but then they're hosts to lots of other critters that can also wreak havoc and destruction upon the bees.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Red Laird is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the bee girl in the Rogue Valley. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org, or check out her picture on our Facebook page. All right, so you've already had losses going on, and then there's the additional issue of the fact that they would normally be coming up to the pollination season, but it's already happening?
Yeah, so because I manage my bees and I was anticipating a early spring, I've been feeding my bees with a little bit of sugar syrup, with some, I call it bee tea. I have some essential oils and some tea that I make for them out of herbs mixed in that's, I think, maybe good for them. There's no good scientific research saying that, but it makes me feel better than just feeding them straight sugar water. So I've been feeding them syrup, and then I've also been feeding them substitute protein patties, pollen patties, substitute pollen, which is kind of like feeding your bees a green smoothie or like a bodybuilder shake. So I started that about a month ago. So my bees they're up to the task because I've kind of tricked them a little early into thinking that it was spring. But wild bees or maybe other hobbyists or sidelander beekeepers that haven't been using that practice, their bees are just kind of waking up and realizing, oh, hey, whoa, spring's here. And that's usually a more of a gradual process. It's a little cooler and it gets warmer, and we've got on a slower scale, and we've got some cooler days mixed in with our warmer days, and not these 70 degree days with full on sunshine in February like we were having. And so the spring just happened so fast, and it happened in a matter of days instead of a matter of weeks. And so our honeybees just haven't had the time to get their colonies up to strength yet. And I know our native bees aren't ready yet, because I haven't really been seeing. I've seen one queen bumblebee in my yard, and the native bees, like bumblebees, they don't overwinter with the whole colony. Just the queens will live, or just the females will live. And so a mated queen will live over the winter in a pile of leaves or wherever she can find when she's first mated in the fall, and kind of sleep through the winter. And then when it's spring, she has to go out and find a good nesting site somewhere underground, like under some bunch grass or an old mouse hole. And it takes quite a while for her to build her whole nest out of wax and fill it with nectar and some pollen and start laying eggs and raising the colony that will then do the pollinating and be the workers for the summer. And the spring bloom is about three and a half weeks early, and that's almost the amount of time that it takes to do one cycle of bumblebee brood. And so they're just not ready.
All right, so the pollinators are really good. So what you did, in effect, was you jump-started the season. You just went ahead and started feeding your bees earlier.
Yeah.
In anticipation of the fact that they needed to be ready to go to start their pollination process.
Mm-hmm. My ones that were left. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned, you lost about 50% over the winter, is
mm-hmm.
that right? Wow. And mostly from varroa, then.
It's really hard to say. What killed them in the end was freezing. The clusters just got so small mm-hmm. that they couldn't keep each other warm. And exactly, teeny tiny little clusters with brood that couldn't be kept warm. And everybody just kind of died in a little huddle because there just wasn't the numbers to stay warm. And there's a multitude of factors that could bring in, that could keep the numbers down or knock the numbers way down. But without something more obvious, I didn't have an obvious Nosema, which is a gut pathogen. There was no dysentery inside the hive. I kind of had to do a little bit of Sherlocking inside my hives and rule out all of the obvious things. It was nothing completely obvious. And so what I think it must be is some sort of a disease that's affecting them on the inside, and that's usually spread with varroa.
How do you treat for varroa? Varroa is a mite, right?
Yeah, varroa is a mite. There are a multitude of different ways to treat with varroa. Their integrated pest management is the best way. That's what I try. So I have screen bottom boards. So the little buggers, if they do get knocked off of the bees, fall through a screen in the bottom of my hive and onto either a sticky board that I coat with oil, and so they drowned a terrible death. Or they fall onto the ground and starve to death. Uh-huh. And that's awesome too. Or And then I put a lot of different essential oils like spearmint and menthol and thymol, which can mess with the brood of the varroa mite, not necessarily of the bee. And there's different acids that you can use, oxalic acid, which has been just the main ingredient in furniture polish, but it was just approved by the EPA last week to be used as a miticide. So that's good news. And formic acid works really well. Those are kind of more of our organic treatments. But then most beekeepers in this country use a synthetic called amitraz, which works really, really, really well. But it's putting a chemical into your hive, and there's a lot of it going into hives. And so it's just a matter of time before the varroa develop a resistance, and we've got an even more super bug out there.
Are there natural things then? I mean, the way everything you're talking about sounds like chemical warfare. Are there natural things that
would
prey
upon
the mites and not the bees?
That we don't have a biological control. Right now, our best hope out of biological control is bees who are hygienic, bees who won't tolerate mites. The mites came in from Southeast Asia in, the early 80s. On bees, they were brought in to pollinate our orchards, and they commingled with our bees, and they spread this pest. And so the bees in Southeast Asia, which brought in the varroa mite, they were living with bees successfully. And the bees and the varroa were living together successfully. And they were able to keep the varroa at about 2% load, and that's usually not that dangerous. They can live that way. And so our best hope is trying to selectively breed a bee that has traits to be able to live with a mite. So they see a mite. There are bees out there that will see a mite and they'll bite it and they'll tear it a little bit, rip off some of its legs. I've seen them under a microscope. It's a glorious thing.
Wow.
And drop them through the screen bottom board. And there's other mites that can sense that there's varroa down in the brood. And so they will uncap the brood and pull the larva out to disrupt the varroa mite's mating cycle.
We're talking about the care and feeding of bees. Sarah Redlaird is the bee girl in the Rogue Valley. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi there. Hello. I really appreciate this much, these kinds of informational radio shows. And when you were at the library a couple of weeks ago showing a movie called Inside the Hive, I learned so much. And just this morning, you saying something about the queen bumblebees being the only, if I understood you correctly, the only bumblebee that goes through the winter that survives. Because I saw one yesterday, and I figured it was trying to get in out of the rain, so it was under my patio cover. And I just let it be, and eventually it flew away. After dried out, I guess. So is that true? Am I thinking correctly?
Yeah, that was probably a queen. If she was quite large and also quite loud, it was most likely a queen bumblebee. And that's the best thing to do, especially for our bumbles and our native bees, is just let them be this time of year. Bumblebees aren't aggressive at all. So you don't really have to have a fear of stings from them. So just let them kind of come in and do their thing and then get on their way.
Let's talk about the difference in attitudes toward bees, because there are so many organizations just in the last couple of years that have come along that seem organizations and individuals who really talk in glowing terms about pollinators and the things we should be doing for them. So it seems like there's a larger bee fan club in society than there used to be.
Oh, my gosh. It's been amazing. I was just saying this on Saturday. We were tabling at the Cheese Festival in Central Point, which was a really fun experience. 4,000 people came through in about 7 hours, and me and my board members were a little talked out by the end of the day. But we were saying how amazing it is just to watch the questions from the public evolve over the last few years. 5 years ago, all the questions were colony collapse disorder and Africanized bees, and I never got any questions deeper than that. But people were coming through the booth, and they were amazingly educated and aware of what's going on with the bees. They had really informed and interesting questions. They really wanted to know what they could do to help, and I love tabling because it gives me a good snapshot and lets me kind of take the temperature of the public as far as bees go. And it's been amazing to kind of move past the conversation of, oh, bees are okay, but I hate getting stung, or I'm allergic to bees, or what about Africanized bees?
That's exactly what I mean, is that, you know, the people and the level of fear, it's like, oh God, a bee, you know, and you watch people throughout your life, I'm sure, flinch like that. But the fact is that
there's a big
move toward being nice to bees. So what's the issue then for fruit growers, for example? I mean, and let me ask in your case specifically first, do your bees travel and do pollination like that?
No, they just stay put. Mm-hmm. They just, we leave them where they are. I just don't really have the type of hives to bring my bees down to pollinate almonds or to go into pears. I have more kind of a hobbyist setup. The gear that I have wouldn't go well on a pellet and be forklifted. It's not super standardized, and so it wouldn't be easy to forklift it onto the back of a flatbed and drive it down the freeway. So they just stay where they are. And which can be challenging, especially in these weather conditions. There was beekeepers last year that were hightailing their bees out of Southern Oregon towards the end of the year because there was no food here for them. And so unless you were near an irrigated crop with like a hayfield that had flowers that are planted for bees, and the rancher has senior water rights, I am next to, the majority of my bees are next to irrigated crops with people that don't have senior water rights, so our irrigation was cut off quite early. But unless you have somewhere where you have access to flowers and water, they were packing up their bees and moving to Idaho and Wyoming, where there was still a bit of a flower, a nectar flow, and a pollen flow before they went into the winter.
So that's what bees need. I mean, late in the season, they still need to have flowers available to them.
Yeah, they need to have flowers from now until the beginning of October in order to stay healthy.
So you've had to work that much harder just to get your bees to get through the winter in decent shape and get ready for the spring. So this sounds like it's going to be a challenging year going forward, assuming that we don't get a gigantic snowstorm over the course of the next month, which I rather doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so right now I'm getting my bees totally amped up and ready to completely capitalize on the next month, because I'm really worried that all of our spring and summer flowers are going to bloom right now. And if it's been like the last 2 years, everything pretty much cuts off the first or second week of June. And then we just go into this nectar dearth they find little bits of something here and there, but hardly enough to sustain them. And so I'm just really hopefully getting them set up to be able to collect a whole lot of honey in the next month or so. And that will hopefully last them with me also supplementally feeding them until wintertime, where they shut down their metabolisms and snuggle up and go to bed.
Are you in touch with a lot of other people who do keep bees commercially for transportation? And what are they telling you about their operations?
Yeah, it's time will tell. The almonds were amazing this year because they got a little bit of rain early on, and then where there's usually quite a few foggy days or dreary days interspersed in the nice days down in California during almond pollination in February and March typically, there wasn't. It was just beautiful sunshine and flying weather, and bees were just about getting ready to start swarming, which means there is an ample amount of pollen and nectar coming into the hives. When I was down there, working in the almonds in, oh my gosh, the second week of February. And then by the third week of February, bees were already getting ready to swarm because of the amount of flight days and the amount of nectar and pollen that the almond trees were giving off. So it's the bees are doing quite well that we're down in the almonds right now, for sure. But the trick is, now that there's been 86% of the country's managed bees go to pollinate almonds, 1.7 million hives are sitting down in California and getting ready to be shipped out right now. But now where do they go? Now that they're completely amped up and ready for this best spring ever, where can they go? Because many of these beekeepers go back to the Midwest or colder states or the Northeast. And so they're just kind of hanging in holding yards right now, munching on the nectar and pollen they just collected, waiting for it to get spring-ish enough in other spots of the country to go back home.
So they're like,
go to the next job.
To use an athletic analogy, they're like in peak mid-season form.
Yeah.
And the season is just not even beginning in parts of the country that are under, like Boston.
Yeah, it's done in California, but then, there's still feet of snow in other places.
Let's take another call. Here's Marion Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sarah Redlaird, the Bee Girl.
Hi. I have a quick question. I don't know if you've covered this before because I tuned in late, but I heard that it's better to buy like organic vegetables and flower starters in your garden because if you buy the conventional ones, they might have the might have been treated with the spray that can kill the bees, and that they will. That's kind of like become a part of the plant, and that they can then pass that on to the bees.
Okay, good question. So for home gardeners, then, I mean, are we looking at organic stuff? Was that better for bees?
That is not 100% of the time. Conventional seeds won't be covered. But there is a possibility that sunflower seeds or some shrubs that you get from a nursery can be pre-treated with a systemic insecticide to keep biting and chewing little insects off of the plants. But that can make its way into the nectar and pollen and then be available for the bees to take back to the hive. So it is best, and we are so incredibly blessed to live here in Southern Oregon, or if you are in another region where you have the ability to shop local for your seeds and your plants, find a local nursery. Plant Oregon is awesome here in Southern Oregon. We also have local seed producers, Seven Seeds Farm, and there's a whole seed co-op here in Southern Oregon. And so really do vote with your fork and keep it local and keep it as organic as you possibly can.
All right. Sounds like it's been a challenging season for bees so far, and probably will continue to be so throughout the rest of the year. Sarah Redlaird goes by Bee Girl around the Rogue Valley. Thanks for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. That'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. Thanks for joining us.